upstairs, right? The ones that have speaking parts. So this isn't youth worship per se. This is kind of a rehearsal for next week. So everybody who's involved in the program next week can go ahead, and Sarah and Angie will meet you in the back and direct you where to go. As they're heading out, I will take this chance to thank, and hopefully all of you will get a chance to thank, the McKennas and the Lewises for our breakfast the last 2 days. Appreciate you guys doing that for us. If you get a little sleepy over the next little bit, Chris, just go get some more bacon. I'd stay away from the pancakes. Those are for sure going to put you out, but maybe the bacon will get you awake a little bit more. As I was kind of preparing for this Sunday, I was looking ahead really to the end of the year. There are two more Sundays left this year, and I realized we have our program next Sunday, and it's going to be a little different. It'll be a lot different. Our children are going to have their performance. It'll be about 15 or 20 minutes. Trisha's going to sing a song for us. We're going to have a piano in here that is going to accompany Trisha, and may sing a couple songs with that, and just kind of get in the Christmas mode. It's the last Sunday before Christmas. And then the following Sunday, is Christmas will already be over. And so it's kind of like, wow, that was fast. We'll be on our way to Tennessee, and so this is my last sermon of 2015, so better get ready. It's going to be lengthy. Yeah, there's the applause from Toby. That's what I was waiting for. That's it. but we've been kind of working through this whole series and this whole discussion of what the church is and what the kingdom is and how that's kind of related, and it really fits nicely into the Christmas season, because we celebrate the Advent and the waiting, and we've talked about that the last few weeks, about how Israel was waiting for a king, and the ironic thing about their answer in Jesus was Jesus came and he says, okay, now we're gonna wait a little bit longer. And so the wait continues. And as I was kind of wrestling through what we're going to talk about today and things, it seemed natural that today's message would kind of lead us into communion. And so our children are dismissed, but they're going to come back. If you've ever kind of, maybe it's subtle, especially if you don't have kids, but I feel like it's very important when we take communion that everybody's with us, because communion is such a key part of who we are as Christians, and we're going to talk a little bit about that this morning. But first, I want to talk about Disney World, and then we'll talk about the church. Most of you know that we went to Disney World this past summer, and it was truly a great vacation. I had been there, Mary Beth had been there when we were kids, but we hadn't been there since, and we were kind of waiting for our kids to be the right, you know, those of you who had kids growing up, or, you know, if you have kids now, you kind of have to find that sweet spot of age-wise, because if they're too young, it's a miserable trip for everyone. If they're too old, it's a miserable trip for everyone. You kind of find that sweet spot. And our kids were kind of there. They're old enough to be able to make it through the long days. And we just had a great time. It was one of those trips where everybody who's asked how it was, I would say, you know, we were on the plane ride home, and we were really, you know, sad to come home. And that's not always the case when you're on vacation, especially when it's like a week-long vacation. Usually somewhere along the line it clicks in and you're like, all right, I'm ready to be home and get back to the real world. But it wasn't really that way for us. We just had a great time. And it was, I say we went to Disney World, we really went to Universal Studios. We were there for 4 days. We went to Disney World for a day, which was cool. I would recommend that, kind of go that route. But here's what I didn't realize when we had gone, as we were making plans to go. It is so expensive to go to those parks. We would have never, my mom and dad paid for most of our trip, which is why we went. Kudos. Shout out to mom and dad and Defiance this morning. But if you haven't gone recently, a ticket to Disney World is over $100 a day per person. $100 a day. There are five people in my family, so quick math, Mike Schreiber. How much is that? $500. $500 a day. That's no food, no parking. Nothing but riding Magic Mountain over and over again. Universal Studios the same day. Now, the longer you stay there, the cheaper it is. That's one of the reasons we went to Universal Studios, because after 3 days, then it's not quite as expensive. But if you're like us, I mean, we don't regularly spend $500 a day on our family. We would if we could, but, you know, we don't. And so we do this thing that probably a lot of you do when you put a lot of money into a vacation or something. You say, we want to make sure we get our money's worth, right? We say that all the time. We want to make sure we get our money's worth. And so if you travel with us, we are like open to close people. Like we're like, all right, we're going to get there, not necessarily first thing, but we're going to be like the last people out of the park. So if you've ever been to like Cedar Point and you've never seen the like roller coaster shut down, you need to come with us sometime because they're like standing there saying, all right, you got to go home now and get off of this. But it's $500 a day. And so we started to kind of map our plans out and we're like, okay, so we're going to go to Disney World or Universal Studios. Disney World, I think, was open until like midnight, which they post that. But Annabeth, you know, then they're not really, they don't mean that, right? They mean like 1:30. So at 1:30, they're like, all right, you know, get out of here. But when you're planning out your day and there's all these people and you're like, okay, at some point we're going to have to eat, which stinks. You know, you hate to take the time to eat, but your stomach starts to feel bad. And you're like, I got to eat something. And then even, you know, as older I get, you can't just go on a ride after a ride after a ride for 25 hours. You got to have some downtime a little bit. And so you kind of map out your day. And like we were at Universal Studios for 4 days. We never were sitting around going, oh, we've pretty much done everything we need to do. We were just constantly doing stuff. And when you go to those amusement parks, and none of us like to acknowledge this, what do you spend most of your time doing? Like, it's not even close, right? I mean, none of us, you don't ever want to stop. You don't ever leave the park going, man, that was a great 8 hours we waited in line today. That really made the trip awesome, you know? It's fantastic. And so we waited in lots and lots of, I mean, think about that. We spent 5 days at amusement parks with our kids waiting in line. I found some research this week. Researchers estimate that we spend between 2 and 3 years of our lives waiting in lines. And when you think about it, that's probably true. We wait in lines everywhere, and especially this time of year. Like, so what are some of the places that we wait in lines? Just go ahead and say some of them. Stores, right? Shopping malls. We had friends. Anybody go to Polaris Mall yesterday? No, you are all smart, right? We all know. I was leaving here yesterday, and this traffic is awful because we know that everybody, those lines are crazy. Where else is a bad place to go this time of year? I went there Friday. The zoo. Man, when we first moved here, we got the note, hey, it's member night at the zoo. We're like, oh, nobody will be there. This will be great. That was the worst decision we ever made. It took like 2 hours to get there because there were so many people on the way there. Friday, I went to the post office, another great place to go during the holidays. Yes. Inevitably, any gathering, now it's opposite at a lot of sporting events. The men's restrooms are usually really long and the women are just kind of popping in and out. But yeah, concerts kind of turns the other way. Anytime you have a large gathering anywhere, we've all waited in line in the bath for bathrooms, right, Dave? Traffic. 6 months of your life, estimate, waiting at red lights. Somebody say something else? I mean, we're in a metropolitan area, so depending on where you work, you kind of look at the time. And I know some of you maybe get up really early so you can beat traffic. Some of you sometimes stay at work extra time because you're like, I can stay here for an extra hour and get home 15 minutes later than I would if I left now. And just think of all the hours that we wait. And how many of you are very impatient traffic people? I am certainly one. Ruth Morrow is my sister. I know I'm feeling that. I just get like panic attacks. Mary Beth, I'm just like, especially when we're heading out to go to Tennessee or something and you don't even get out of town, you're waiting in lines. And the moral of the story is, like, we hate to wait. Like, we hate it. I've never met anybody who's like, yeah, I mean, waiting is pretty cool, you know? No, it's not. It's terrible. And the only thing that we hate worse than waiting is we hate the idea of waiting. Like, think about that. And here's how I can prove my point. I got to pick Clementine up from her dance last night, and I was a few minutes late. I mean, I couldn't have been more than 10 minutes late. And I get there, and she says, I've been waiting forever. And I apologize to the people waiting with her. It really hasn't been that long. And so we're waiting. I said, Clementine, how long were you waiting? I don't, like a half an hour. And then she gets home, and she tells Mary Beth, I waited like an hour. And you know that this is how all of us are as human nature. Like, as we estimate our times of wait, it's always longer and longer and longer. Like, how many times have you been kind of irritably waiting for someone? You know, I've been waiting for like an hour. And you look at it, it's been 27 minutes, which is a long time, but it hasn't been an hour. But it's that idea of knowing that we're waiting, and we hate it. We hate it. This is a great example of how much we hate the idea of waiting. Back in the 1950s in New York City, they were having this experience of rush hour traffic, only it wasn't cars, it was elevators. Because of all those high-rise buildings in Manhattan, everybody was using the elevators at relatively the same time period. And you know, if you've been like on vacation at checkout at a hotel with an elevator, it's the worst time. You're like, well, I guess we'll just take the 27 flights down because this is going to take forever. And it's kind of irritating on vacation, but imagine if this is your job or your house, and maybe some of you work in some of those high rises. And so buildings everywhere were getting these complaints. The wait time is too long. And so they looked at some possible solutions. And they decided, well, we can't add more cars. We can't make the cars go any faster up and down the elevator shafts. And if we just created another elevator shaft, you know that would be terribly expensive. And so they go to some smart people at Penn, and they said, look, we got this problem. All these people are complaining about the elevator shafts and the wait time. And so this guy from Penn says, well, I think we need to reframe the problem a little bit. The problem's not the wait time. The problem is the complaints about the wait time. And so they did this really ingenious thing. They put a floor-length mirror right next to the elevator, top to bottom, and they did it in a trial building. And guess what? Almost overnight, the complaints went completely away because it was just enough distraction of looking themselves in the mirror. Or maybe you've seen yourselves, you wanted to look at someone who you were, you know, but you were a little intimidated to look directly into their eye, and so they would look at the reflection in the mirror. And immediately, that was just enough time that their complaints about waiting, the concept of waiting, kind of went away. Now, theme parks are masters of this. Disney World is on the cutting edge of this because that's their business, right? And so in the 1950s, they came up with this concept called the rides per capita formula. And that's how many people are in their park at a given time versus how many people are actually on a ride or involved in one of their pieces of entertainment. So obviously, the better that number is, the fewer people that are waiting. And when they first decided to kind of try to get those numbers down, they said, well, we can build more rides and more attractions, and those numbers will go down. Well, the problem is they're sinking millions of dollars into the rides, and how many people can fit on a roller coaster at a time? You know, 20, 30? So they're really not making a big dent into that. And so Disney World, places like Cedar Point, Kings Island, they all do this. They try to distract you while you're in line. So what are some of the things they do? Yeah, they used to do the old music thing, and so they try to sell you something. There's vending machines everywhere because waiting in line with a pop is way better than waiting in line, you know, just nothing. There's characters that'll come by. There's TVs in the line sometimes. I've noticed that these things aren't quite as big a deal ever since everybody's got one of these to distract them now. Like, why put the money on a screen when everybody's carrying one in their pocket? But they come up with all these things to try to distract you because the wait's not changing, but the concept of the wait is changing. When we went to Universal Studios, we had to walk through the entire Hogwarts castle to get on a ride. And our kids never even noticed that we waited an hour and a half because there were so many things to look at. And so here's the question to kind of get us rolling today. If we hate to wait so much, all of the things that we've been talking about, with the exception of the bathroom, like if you've got to wait to the bathroom, you've got to wait to the bathroom. There's really not anything else you can do about that. But everything else we've been talking about, why do we wait? Like, why do we take the time to wait for a roller coaster? And the other thing Disney World does now is they, you know, in most parks, post the wait time. You know, used to in the old days, you didn't even know. Like, you're getting in this line and you had no idea if it was 20 minutes or 2 hours. Now at least you have an estimate. And on Disney World, I don't know about the other parks, they have apps so you can kind of keep track. Hey, the wait's down, we can run over and get on there. But the question is, why do we wait? Well, I think that we know the answer. The answer is because it's worth it, right? I've been at the end of a lot of roller coasters. You know, you get off and you have that adrenaline rush, and it's always fun to kind of watch those people because they all get on the rides kind of bored and they've been waiting all this time. But when they get off, those 3 or 4 minutes they're on the ride, gets that adrenaline pumping and they're just excited. And inevitably, you'll hear somebody goes, man, that was so worth it. Because there's that idea that I waited 2 hours for this 3-minute ride, but it was so great that it was worth it. Same thing happens on Black Fridays or when the new iPhone product comes out. You wait. Why are you waiting in line? Because it's going to be worth it. Now, for the most part, we've been talking about commercial items and business and things, or vacation and leisure, things like that. But there's a lot of things that we wait for in our lives. All our kids left, but, you know, Ben Ballyard, Samuel, there's Alicia can't wait. Marina can't wait to be 16. Just can't wait. And when you're 11, you don't care that much, but when you're 14 and when you're 15, you see that there's promise. All these people practice their maneuverability test in our parking lot, so it's like always on my mind. And I have to tell you, it was hilarious that somebody put a sweeper out in the middle of their thing. It was funny. But you have to wait to be 16. You have to wait to drive. You have to wait to vote. You have to wait. We save money in anticipation of going on vacation. Or maybe it's the waiting for saving enough money to purchase our first house. Or we wait for the birth of our first child. You know, we don't think a lot about it, but isn't it interesting that God didn't set up this world that says, well, you know, you get married and you decide how many kids you want to have, and then you just pick them out. You know, all right, I want two boys and two girls. All right, there you go. All right? No, you go through the process, and then you wait. Hey, I'm pregnant. Okay, when's the baby coming? Tomorrow? The next? No, you have to wait nine months. This waiting process. Waiting is built into the very fabric of our world. You know, here it is winter, and I know it's 78 degrees outside and sunny and everything, but the idea behind winter, at least, is that we're waiting for the longer, warmer days of summer. We're waiting for spring to kind of awaken. Waiting. Waiting has a spiritual dynamic to it. Have you ever thought about how many times in the Bible people have to wait? Like, I've never kind of pictured it, but imagine Noah on the ark, stepping out every day, waiting for the water to recede so they could get started with replenishing the earth. Just waiting. And I know we've already kind of proven with some of our discussions, none of us seem to be very good at waiting. If you had a child who just naturally was good at waiting, if you could see me after the services, please. Because I've never seen any parent with their kid that just was just born to wait. We have to learn, right? Wait, just wait a little bit longer. Just wait. Think about Abraham waiting in between his communication with God. God comes to him and says, I want you to leave your people. I want you to leave your nation. I'm going to take you to another nation. And I don't know how long he's between conversations with God. He's out wandering on this journey, and I wonder if he's just waiting every night. Okay, God, when are you going to show up? But what's next? One of my favorite stories of waiting is Jacob and Rachel. You remember that story in Genesis about how Jacob really wanted this girl, and he gets to his wedding night, and the father-in-law, I mean, you think your father-in-law's messed up. This guy switches daughters on him. Well, you know, the older, you know, can't really be not married while the younger's married. And then there's that great verse, and I read this at all the wedding ceremonies I perform, that he had to work 7 more years for Rachel. And you remember what the verse says? It seemed like only a few days because he was so in love with Rachel. Mary Beth and I's anniversary, Brian and Sarah's anniversary is Friday. 16 years, but it just seemed like a few days, right, Brian? Really, just a day, Mary Beth, like 24 hours. There's the story of the Israelites wandering and waiting in the desert, and you wonder how that must have been like. We've been talking about that in our Sunday morning class a little bit, just waiting for something to happen. And then when Jesus finally comes, there's a little bit of waiting in his life, waiting for his death. The apostles, in that time when he does die, waiting for him to come back, those 3 days. And of course, we, in this Advent season, enter into that waiting, waiting for his return. Every child who's ever waited in line to see Santa Claus, or ride a roller coaster, or get an autograph, has had that same question asked of the people around them. How much longer? Are we almost there yet? How much longer? When Job is tested by God, and his children are taken away, and his health is taken away, and his fortune is taken away, a few times in Job, he cries out, how long? How long must we endure? Then you turn to the book of Psalms, and there are so many psalms that cry out, like in Psalm 6, my soul is in deep anguish. How long, Lord? How long? In chapter 13, how long, Lord, will you forget me forever? Psalm 35, how long will you look on? Psalm 62, how long will you assault me? Psalm 74, how long will the enemy mock you? Kudos to Mike Schreiber for the first time ever, I'm guessing, reading from Habakkuk for our reading this morning, right? I know everybody else had that in their devotion read, but at the beginning of Habakkuk, he cries out, kind of seeing the destitute nature of the nation, and their alienation from God, and Habakkuk's response is, how long must I call for help? Perhaps one of the most dramatic and haunting pictures in Scripture is in Revelation chapter 6, when they open the fifth seal, and there's this picture of under the altar, the souls of those who have been slain because of the word of God and the testimony that they had maintained. They cried out in a loud voice, "How long, sovereign Lord, holy and true, until you judge the inhabitants of the earth and avenge our blood?" And the response then comes in verse 11. Each of them was given a white robe, and they were told to wait just a little bit longer until their number of their fellow servants and brothers who were to be killed as they had been was completed. Basically, they were told to just hang in there a little bit longer. A little bit more. There's a plan in the works. Just hang in there for a little bit longer. And it's interesting, they're told to hang in there until their number is complete, which means, don't get me wrong, more people are going to have to die for my name. More evil things are going to happen. But just hang in there for a little bit longer. Yet waiting in lines in the amusement parks, Walt Disney World with your family, is a far cry from sitting along a bedside of someone that you know and love who's just waiting to die. I have a great aunt of mine in Defiance right now, and her family is around her as she's just waiting to die in hospice care. It's a different kind of waiting. It's a much more serious kind of waiting. Waiting for a family member who is enduring a sickness or an illness and watching them and waiting with them. It's a different kind of waiting. Watching cycles of poverty and cycles of crimes in communities and waiting for that to be changed, waiting for something better to happen, it's a different kind of waiting, a much more serious kind of waiting. It's a far cry from really what all of us are doing, is waiting to die. In a far less serious note, I hope this will make a connection, we're all waiting for something. Sports fans in Cleveland are waiting for a championship. And it's interesting, one of the blogs I follow is entitled Waiting for Next Year. And I love that because long-suffering sports fans always talk about next year. There's always next year. We say that all the time. And anything doesn't go our way, we say, well, there's always next year. And I know it's about sports, but I think that there's something spiritually significant in that. And I think that's what draws people to sports. I mean, think about it. All the teams that you may cheer for, when they win, 75% of us who are Buckeye fans, right? Last year they win, and there's this feeling of, we did it, and now what, right? And what do they always say? Oh, we're going to Disney World. And they start the new season, and you just get hunger and thirst to do it again. Let's win again, because the idea is there's something inside of us that we're longing for, and it's not satisfied with anything else. It may seem like a trite example to talk about sports in the midst of all these more important things, but maybe sometimes that's what turns people to sports, because there's this at least temporary fulfillment of something worthwhile and tangible. One of the weekly sections of this blog that I read is entitled, While We're Waiting. I love the name of that title. As a Browns fan, it speaks loudly, but as Christians, it seems like the appropriate title to every time we get together. This morning's gathering could be entitled While We're Waiting, because each and every one of us are waiting. We're longing for something. And every time that we see a tragedy, every time we see a world tragedy or have a personal tragedy in our life, we're broken, we're burdened, we're sad. Sometimes maybe we're even distraught. But as Christians, we're never surprised. At least we shouldn't be. Because we live in this great in-between times where we're longing for something else, waiting for next year or next decade or maybe it's next millennia. But we're waiting for something to fill that void in all of us. We're waiting for the return of the King. We're waiting for the Messiah to come back. Now we're going to go full circle back to our trip to Disney World. And I have to admit, I didn't even talk to Mary Beth about this, but I think you'll agree with me. We've been married 16 years. We got this thing down pretty good, right? I don't really ever remember waiting in line when we were at Disney World. Like, I don't remember that being a burden. Our kids were probably a little cantankerous here or there, but for the most part, we just waited together. And it was actually kind of nice. I'm not saying that waiting in line was the best part of the trip, because that would sound stupid, but it wasn't the worst part of the trip, because there we were standing in line to ride these things, and we didn't have work to be burdened with. We didn't have school to be burdened with. We didn't have anything of life. Even our cell phones were dead by lunchtime, and so there was nothing else to do but just talk to each other and enjoy each other's company. And there was the five of us, and my family was there, and Mary Beth's sister was there, and we just kind of would get in different groups of each other, and we would wait for maybe an hour, maybe 2 hours. And it just never seemed like it. And we weren't on the plane ride home saying, and I thought about this, I mean, it would probably be legitimate to say we waited, I don't know, 6-7 hours a day on rides, times five. We probably spent an entire 24-hour period of our day, or our vacation, waiting in lines. And yet somehow we were on the trip home saying, you know what, that was a great time. I didn't want to leave. And it seems to me that that's exactly what the church is supposed to be. It seems to me that that's exactly what we're supposed to be about. While we're waiting for the kingdom, while we're waiting for this anticipation of a time where there's no death and there's no tears and there's all that stuff, that perfect world that we know. And any time I do a funeral, I say, you know what, we just get this sense, even in the best of circumstances, it's not the way it's supposed to be, because there's some picture inside of us of the way that it is supposed to be. And we come together on Sundays and we sing songs about it, and we kind of tie our life to it. But in the end, we come together and we gather together, and we are the church waiting together. Waiting together. Not for a championship for our favorite team, or not for something to make sense, but for the ultimate telos, is the Greek word, the end, for when Christ comes back. And we sing so many songs about it. And one of the things that we do each and every week is we pause around the table. Brian, if you want to go, let them know we're going to take communion here in just a minute. But I started thinking about communion and the role that it plays in our church family and in our lives. And one of the great things about our church tradition is that we do this every week. And maybe some of us were raised in a tradition that says we do it every week so that you don't go to hell. And I don't know if that's the point of it. But instead, it's the other extreme of things, that we do it every week to just be reminded. And every week, people come into our building and they've had a just awful, terrible week. And there's things going on in their lives that are difficult. And there's the other extreme, too. People had a great week, and things just seem to be really good. And we come together, whether it's 4 or 5 of us, or whether it's 100 of us or 1,000 of us, and we come together, and we say, let's just take a minute and be reminded of what we're waiting for. I mean, what are we waiting for? Because this time of year, kind of, we get all these messages, this will make us happier, this will make us better, this will make us feel more complete. You have all these maybe subtle promises at your job, if you just get this promotion, or if you just settle this business deal, or if this comes through all right, and it just always leaves us feeling empty because it's not quite what we were thinking it would be. And communion is like this small appetizer that says, yeah, we're not there yet. But as a church, we come together and we play, like our kids play house when they're younger, we play kingdom, right? And we don't do it exactly right. And churches are messed up places sometimes, and destruction comes to them and tears them apart and all these things. But that's the exception, not the rule. The rule is we come together, and this really broken, odd group of people says, you know what, we're going to try to live this kingdom out the way that God intended it to be. And we're going to take this communion every week to be kind of reminded of who we are, whose we are, and what brings us together. And so as we prepare our minds to take communion, John's going to come up and kind of help lead our thoughts this morning. The kids are going to come back and take this together. But don't ever let this be lost on any of us. This is our anchor. This is our anchor of who we are and what it is that we're waiting for.